This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into our Thursday edition of Sports Talk, heading into the second half on this February 20th edition, and getting a number of text messages about the final between USA and Canada. I said, hella Buke. It's hella Buck, the goaltender. I was pronouncing it with the CYK.
Yeah, the best goaltender in hockey. And he's an American. You love to see it.
And what's funny, he plays in Winnipeg.
Yeah, no, he does play. And that's why the Jets are so good this year. I think I saw a stat during the prelude to the first time these two teams play, Canada versus USA. And it said that Hellebuck had like 7 shutouts this season. And then like 8 times where he had given up 1 goal or something like that. He's just been a brick wall back there. So we'll definitely talk with Tim Peel in a little bit, and I'll have to ask him about what he's seen from Connor Hellebuck this year that's made him so impressive, because he is legitimately one of the best, if not the best, goalie in hockey.
That's what you always hear, you know, like defense in football wins championships. Well, you need that hot goalie to carry you in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and obviously right now in this tournament, Hellebuck has done a hell of a job.
He's done a fantastic job all year. That's actually kind of the funny thing about him, though, is that his MO was that he wilted kind of in the big moments, you know, because Winnipeg had a very poor playoff run just this past year where he didn't play very well at all. But he played awesome in the first matchup against Canada. The only goal he gave up was a fast break to the best player in hockey with Connor McDavid. So not much you can really do there. Steve, before we get into anything, I actually saw a text that I thought was pretty interesting asking about the Pelicans' chance to get the number one draft pick. And for all you Pelican fans out there that are counting lottery balls already, I've got the answer for you.
Ah, okay.
Right now, if the season were to end today, which we still have a little under 2 months left to go this year,
27 Pels games left,
the Pelicans would have a 14% chance to get the number one overall pick. And that sounds bad, but it's just the way the NBA has changed, you know, to kind of limit tanking, that the three teams with the worst records in the NBA have the same chance to get the number one pick. It's 14. Right now, the Pelicans have the second worst record in the NBA, which gives them a 14% chance to get the number one pick, a 13.4% chance to get the number two pick, a 12.7% chance to get the number three pick, and a 12% chance to get the number four pick. That is the same exact thing for the team with the worst record and the team with the third worst record. So if you fall in that category, those numbers will stay the same. What's different is if you have the worst record in the NBA, you have a 47.9% chance to get the fifth pick. The fifth pick is as low as you can fall. With the second worst record in the NBA, which is where the Pelicans are right now, they have a 27.8% chance to end up with the fifth pick and a 20% chance to end up with the sixth pick. The sixth pick is the lowest that they can fall. So the way the numbers kind of crunch out, the average pick for these top teams, the worst team, the average pick is a 3.7, the second worst team, 3.9, and the third worst team, a 4.1. Now, for those Pelicans fans that are, you know, counting lottery balls already, they don't care about wins or losses at this point in the season. Last night was actually a pretty big win for the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah.
Going to L.A. and holding off the Lakers in an upset victory. I think they were like almost 14-point underdogs in that game.
LeBron at the end, clank.
Twice.
Right.
And I was losing my mind watching that game because I was just like, okay, come on, Charlotte, pick up this win, pick up this win. And they gave him two decent looks at three. Like, foul him. Make him hit free throws. You're not going to hit three free throws. So it was crazy. But they ended up missing both of them. LeBron did. So the Charlotte Hornets won, which means that they're now at 14 in the win column. The Pelicans and the Utah Jazz are tied at 13. So it's going to be, you know, kind of a race to the finish line. We'll see what happens in the final couple months of the season. But right now, for that texter that asked, the Pelicans are in that number of the final of the worst three teams in the NBA right now, where those numbers stay the same for their odds for the first, second, third, and fourth overall pick.
Yeah, and Washington is way at the bottom there with just 9 wins on the season.
It's going to be hard to catch Washington, Steve. I'm going to be honest with you. I'd be interested to see what their over-under win total would be at this point in the season, like projecting for the rest of the year.
Maybe they get 3 more wins?
Like, that's what I'm saying. If you set it at 12.5,
yeah.
Do you take the over? I don't think I do.
That's tough.
So that's what I'm saying. Washington is in the driver's seat to have the worst record in the NBA this season.
Plus, you got to figure, too, with the Wizards. They're in full tank mode.
Yeah, the Wizards are – all these teams kind of are, Steve. Yeah. Like, the Wizards are in full tank mode, but the Utah Jazz, they're the same way, and the Pelicans are right there with them. I know they play in a couple weeks here in Utah. The Charlotte Hornets are kind of that other team to watch. Like I mentioned, we'll see where they end up. As of now, they're in that 2 spot. But, you know, they're right there with Utah. Like, New Orleans is 13-42. Utah is 13-41. So it's that slight of a difference there. The Charlotte Hornets, for reference, is now 14-39. And then the next closest team is, like, Toronto. So in all likelihood, as when we were talking with Jake Madison, the Pelicans are going to finish with a bottom 5 record in the NBA. Now, how many wins will they end up with, and how far will that push them out of that top 3 is what I think the real question is.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we talked about the Victor Wembanyama news. After the Pels played Dallas tomorrow, they got back-to-back games Sunday, then Tuesday against the San Antonio Spurs. And sadly, we won't see Wemby. And I know later on in March, they also have a matchup against San Antonio again. But unfortunate news for Victor Wembanyama with the blood clots in the shoulder, sidelining him for the entire season now, and you just got to hope that the young man gets better.
Yeah, exactly. I just hope the best for Wemby. He's a fantastic player, a fantastic talent, and as I mentioned in the Sports Flash, the NBA is going to be without one of their brightest young stars for the rest of the season, which is really sad. If you're looking at the Pelicans' end of the season, they actually do play a decent amount of playoff teams as well, Steve. So once again, if you are counting those lottery balls, they're going to have some tough games in the final basically month and a half of the year. Now, there are some cupcakes thrown in there, like you'll be playing Charlotte once, you'll be playing Brooklyn at one point late in the season, also Utah.
They'll be like, you win, no, you win, no, you win.
But after, I mean, outside of those 3 games, it's a lot of teams that you think are, well, I mean, the Spurs have lost Wemby for the year, so they don't really have much to win for either. But it's a lot of teams that have something to play for, right? Pelicans have something to play for, but just kind of the opposite.
How devastating, too, for a guy like Chris Paul, who I won't say was ring chasing in San Antonio. No. They were definitely not considered a favorite to be in NBA Finals, even making it that far.
San Antonio is one of those teams with a very bright future, though. And, of course, they're in our division.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Victor Wembanyama and that kid, Stephon Castle, who they are super high on. And they just made a trade for De'Aaron Fox as well. So, we'll see what happens there. I think that the Pelicans, if you're looking ahead, it's pretty tough to find, you know, the 20-win mark. And we'll see by the time the season wraps up where that would put them in the standings. But in all likelihood, they're going to be in that number for the top 5 odds in the lottery. And if they finish in the top 3, as I mentioned, that's kind of what you're looking for.
And the luck of the lottery balls we've seen gone the Pel's way, at least in recent history.
Yeah, that's the issue with the lottery as well. Think of last year. The Atlanta Hawks had the 9th odds in the lottery, and they hopped all the way to number 1. Now, it wasn't nearly as good of a draft as this year is. They picked Zachary Rees-Hoshea with the number 1 overall pick. He's not Cooper Flagg. Sorry to let you know.
Got a great name, though.
You know, it's fun to say. Very, very French, for sure. But with this year's draft, you know, at this point, you're just trying to collect as many lottery balls as possible.
Yeah, and looking at the Pels going into tomorrow night's matchup, they've listed 4 players out for the game: Brandon Boston, Keon Brooks Jr., Herb Jones, and DeJounte Murray. Meanwhile, center Yves Missy, the rookie, is questionable with a right hyper knee extension. Wishing well for him, because definitely want to see more of Yves down the stretch. He's been a big highlight and a bright spot for this Pels team going throughout this season. And meanwhile, forward center Kelly Olynyk will make his Pelicans debut. He's available now for the contest for the first time after being acquired in that trade. So congratulations on clearing any kind of visa issues on, you know, coming to the country.
But at the same time, look at what's happening with Dallas.
Oh, man.
Their front court is decimated, Steve.
Street clothes remaining in street clothes.
Street clothes is in street clothes. That's to be expected, to be fair. But Dwight Powell's also injured. Daniel Gafford is injured. PJ Washington is dealing with injuries. Like, their starting front court
Lively's
and
out.
Their backcourt front, like their backup front court is all injured. So, yeah, you expect Zion Williamson to have a big game. But at the same time, if you're counting those lottery balls, have a good game, pick up a loss.
We're getting ready for the puck to drop between USA and Canada coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll preview that matchup with former NHL referee Tim Peel right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Charlie Long, and happy to welcome in Tim Peel, former NHL referee and host of the Snipes and Stripes podcast on the Believe Network. Tim, thank you so much for the time today. We are so looking forward to getting ready for that puck to drop 7 o'clock between USA and Canada. How you been?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, you know what? This morning was the first time in a long time that I woke up and I was, like, pumped for the game. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. You know, it's become more than a hockey game. It's become a political event as well because of what our president has said to Canada as far as being the 51st state and calling Prime Minister Trudeau, Governor Trudeau, and, you know, the Canadians hate us right now. It's reminiscent of the 1980s between the Russians and the U.S. So it's going to be fantastic.
Tim, in a time where all-star events just don't matter. I mean, we just saw what happened with the NBA's All-Star Weekend, how much of a disaster that was. You know, the Pro Bowl doesn't matter in football. The NHL taking a step forward with the Four Nations Tournament, it's been an unbelievable success.
It really has. You've got to give a lot of credit to Gary Bettman and Bill Daly. Bill Daly's the deputy commissioner, because I'd done an all-star game before in 2012 in Ottawa. And it's like watching paint dry. You know, it's boring. Fans aren't into it. All the All-Star game is simply a event to bring the corporate sponsors down to. That's all it is, because as far as an entertainment value, it is zero. So, yeah, I'm happy that they did this, because I was looking forward to the Four Nations, but I didn't think it would have the impact that it's had. And that's been quite impressive.
It has been awesome. Definitely like a mini Olympics going on right now. And I was surprised to see today, looking at the line, that the over-under for goals scored in this matchup is set at 5.5. Does that seem a bit high to you in this matchup, or you think we're in for a shootout tonight?
No, I think that's going to be bang on. I think this is going to be a 3-1, 3-2 hockey game. The U.S. has the advantage in net with Connor Hellebuyck. He's the DeVezina Trophy winner, which is given to the best goaltender from last season. But Jordan Binnington, who played for the St. Louis Blues in the city that I currently reside, he won a Stanley Cup in Game 7 against Boston in that building that he's playing in tonight.
Wow.
He won that in 2019 and absolutely stood on his head. Boston should have been up 3-1, 4-1 after the first period, and Binnington absolutely stole the game, and he's got that potential to do so. I'm Canadian, but I've lived in the U.S. in St. Louis for 24 years. My wife's American. My kids are American. And my family and friends, they don't want to talk to me right now because I'm rooting for the U.S. And I'm just worried, because whenever you have Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and Sidney Crosby on a team,
right,
who knows what can happen? You know, they could win the game 4-1 tonight. That team is so explosive. And the Tkachuks are a little banged up, I think. Charlie McAvoy, who was an absolute stud against Canada last Saturday, he's out of the lineup. So it's going to be exciting. I can't wait.
When you see the two teams facing off, what to you, I guess, would be the biggest keys to a victory for the U.S. in this matchup?
Well, I think that the U.S. is certainly more physical than Team Canada. Brady Tkachuk led that charge the other night. Even though Matthew Tkachuk isn't a fighter. So I see them being more physical. I think Canada might have a bit more skill on the front end. But then Canada's got a stud in Cale Makar, one of the top defensemen in the NHL, plays for the Colorado Avalanche. And he didn't play the first game against Canada, so he's in the lineup tonight against the U.S. Chris Kreider is in. He's a perennial 20-goal scorer for the New York Rangers. He's in for the Americans tonight. It's going to, you know what this game is going to come down to? It's going to come down to bounces. It's going to come down to traffic in front of the net. And it's the dirty goals that are going to win this game. And I'm hoping that the U.S. comes out on top.
Tim, you mentioned Connor Hellebuyck. I wanted to get your thoughts on him because you remember last year he had a really strong season with Winnipeg, but then the kind of knock on him was that he wilted in the big moments, like that playoff series that he had last year did not go very well. But at the same time, if you're looking at what he's done so far in this Four Nations tournament, he's only allowed 2 goals on 47 shots in the first 2 games. He's been fantastic early on, and I think if he has another strong showing tonight, NHL.com says that he could potentially be the MVP of the entire tournament.
Yeah, no, that's a great point that you brought up because it was abnormal for the way that he had played in the regular season to the playoffs. But that was also, it wasn't just on him, it was also on the team. They just played very bad defensively. And unfortunately in hockey, I'd hate to be a goalie parent because it always seems that the goalie gets blamed for everything. You know, they can make 5 mistakes on one shift and miss their check or miss a pass. But if a goalie lets in a semi-weak goal, he gets blamed with anything. But I know Hellebuyck is ready for the challenge tonight. He's an absolute pro, and I'm expecting him to have a tremendous game.
For you so far through this tournament, who has been your MVP, would you say, for the U.S. right now?
Well, that's, you know what, I would have said, even though he doesn't get a lot of points and he doesn't get the headline that the Tkachuk brothers get,
right.
But I would have picked Charlie McAvoy. I'd also pick Zach Werenski. He's an incredible defenseman. And, you know, I think I'd have to go with McAvoy, and it's really unfortunate. It was a dirty play by Joel Armia against the Finns. He cross-checked McAvoy from behind into the post, and McAvoy then played another game remarkably. It just tells you how tough hockey players are. But you know what? They're a team, and somebody put out there on Twitter today, they said, you know, they were talking about Johnny Gaudreau. And, you know, I ref Johnny Gaudreau, and unfortunately he was killed in that car accident last fall, and he would have been on this team. And I know that the Americans are going to, they're a proud bunch. They're very proud. And it used to be Canada's game, but it's not Canada's game anymore. The Americans have come so far over the last 5, 6, 7 years, even dating back to 96 when Keith Tkachuk, Matthew and Brady's father played in the World Cup and the Americans won it back then. So it's not Canada's game anymore. And I think it's going to be a tremendous contest.
We know, you know, obviously with McAvoy out, how big of a hit is that for the U.S.?
It's a huge hit. And they've got Jake Sanderson playing. He's a phenomenal defenseman for the Ottawa Senators. One of the best skating defensemen that I've ever seen. His father, Jeff, played in the NHL. He comes from great bloodlines. But Charlie McAvoy, you know, he stood up Connor McDavid on the sidewall. He laid Connor McDavid out, and Connor McDavid doesn't get hit very often because he's such a good skater and he's so elusive and tough to hit. So it's a big hit, and it's going to take all 20 guys to dig in and make up for having an all-star defenseman like Charlie out.
Shifting gears a little bit here, Tim, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about ESPN report. Kevin Weeks had mentioned that NHL, there's some interest in potentially getting an expansion franchise in New Orleans. A group has approached the NHL about getting that done. I just want to get your thoughts about that kind of early on in the process. I know, you know, it's just reports early on, but it's very fascinating. Sure. For the least.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up because I think it would, when I saw it, it kind of came out of nowhere because we've been hearing Houston, we've been hearing Atlanta, of course. you know, you've got the Pelicans, you've got the Saints. I think you've got the building there to house a NHL team. The only thing that I would say is when Florida came into the NHL, people would say, hockey will never go in Florida. When Tampa right. came in, they said the same thing. Vegas came in, people were, I don't know. Well, guess what? Those three cities have all won Stanley Cups in the last 4 or 5 years. It's incredible. All three of them have incredible fan bases. And if you have a good product and good ownership, that's the key. You have to have good ownership. And that's why the Arizona Coyotes had to relocate to Salt Lake City, because the ownership in Arizona was just atrocious. And now you've got Ryan Smith, who's a billionaire that brought the hockey team to Lake City. So if you have good ownership, I know New Orleans is a tremendous sports town. I know more about it than I do. I don't know if they have enough corporate sponsorship to be able to support three professional teams. But I say, why not? I think it would be fantastic.
Tim, definitely appreciate the time getting ready for that Four Nations Face-Off Championship, and appreciate you giving us some time before the puck drops.
Thanks, Tim.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Anytime.
Tim Peel, former NHL referee, joining us there. Also host of the Snipes and Stripes podcast on the Believe Network, so you can check out more of his stuff there. And yeah, growing up in New Jersey, obviously a Devils fan, and I got the treat of getting to see three Stanley Cups. And we've kind of talked a little bit about this off the air, Charlie. There's nothing like playoff hockey, and this Four Nations tournament has definitely brought that at the All-Star break right now for us.
This is, I mean, it's a grand slam for the NHL. You talked about the viewership. It's like playoff viewership for an All-Star event. It's been fantastic for the NHL. I agree exactly with what Tim was mentioning there.
And the intensity's there. We saw three fights in a matter of, 9 seconds, last matchup between USA and Canada.
And that's the issue with specifically the NBA's All-Star events, is that the players don't care.
No, they're going through the motions.
And now the football's become like a flag football thing, whatever. You know, I understand that's a
little bit
different.
And more of a sideshow with all those, you know, the events going on with it too.
Right. The NHL games are legitimate playoff games. That's the intensity that these guys play with for their countries. It's been fantastic. Fantastic viewership. I can't wait to watch it tonight. And hopefully, you know, Team USA picks up another W over Team Canada, which I think they broke like a streak of 26 straight games that Canada had won with Sidney Crosby playing. So, I mean, they've been really, really good. At the same time, Team USA is going to pick up that dub tonight.
Yeah, now, you know, we mentioned with the NBA's All-Star format, maybe they can look at this and adapt something where they do a World versus USA kind of tournament.
Yes, they could. Adam Silver's just experimenting at this point. We talked about how he's obsessed with tournaments himself, you know, the in-season tournament and the play-in tournament, and now this new All-Star format tournament that they had, which didn't work out very well just because the players still don't really care.
I give him at least credit for trying something.
He's trying.
Right.
But it's up to the players to actually, you know, play, which is a little bit asking too much, I guess.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Want to hear from you on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned on WWL after the break. Big thanks again to Tim Peel, former NHL referee, joining us there, helping us break it down between the Four Nations face-off between USA and Canada. Charlie, one of our texters, 8942, saying, for me, this is better than the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. That's patriotic. I love it.
Yeah, and you know what? We kind of talked a little bit about if there was a team to come to New Orleans, could it possibly be housed inside the Smoothie King Center? I know they had ice capabilities in the past when the Brass were here, but that was ancient, you know, times ago, and I just don't know if that equipment is still functional and able to support a rink in the Smoothie King.
Right. You know, I was in Dallas last April, and I got to see the Stars play the Edmonton Oilers in the Western Conference Finals. It was like Game 2 that I went to go see. One of the coolest sporting events I've ever been to in my life, by the way. It was awesome.
Right. When you hear talk about electric energy, I'm sure that was like for the playoff game.
It was hosted in the American Airlines Center, which is also the home of the Dallas Mavericks.
Right.
It's not out of the question to have an NBA and an NHL franchise in the same city. I think, you know, Madison Square Garden does it too, right? With the Knicks and the Rangers.
Absolutely. And the New Jersey Devils used to do it with the Nets when they were in town.
But you probably need an updated arena to do it.
For sure.
Like a state-of-the-art. Yeah, state-of-the-art arena to be able to host both an NBA and an NHL franchise.
Well, I know they've been wanting to either get a new arena for the Pelicans or at least update the Smoothie King. And if you get an NHL team, that's the perfect time, obviously.
The American Airlines Center was really cool. And I will say this. It had, what's his name? The legendary Stars player. He has the most goals.
Mike Madonna?
Madonna, thank you. And they had a statue of him out front and a statue of Dirk Nowitzki out front as well. And it was really cool to see two legendary kind of players memorialized right out front of basically their home, where they played.
I know a lot of question is, can New Orleans support a hockey team? Is there interest here? And I think we talked about it even with Tim Peel, the fact that if you have a winner, people will come.
Absolutely. I mean, people question hockey in the desert with Vegas. And as Tim had mentioned, people question hockey in Florida with Tampa Bay and Florida.
Exactly. Oh, man, and I got to go to a Tampa Bay Lightning game going when I was on the sideline doing Tampa Bay, when the Saints played Tampa Bay. Atmosphere there is out of control. They actually have lightning that goes, you know, I guess you'd say that like static electricity, the lightning produced in the ceilings when the goals scored, and the place was packed.
Yeah, I would love to have an NHL team here. Now, you know, there are other cities that might be above them in the pecking order, but the fact that New Orleans has been mentioned is just exciting, Steve.
Fingers crossed on that one. I know there's been a lot of naysayers, but would love to see the puck drop in New Orleans. Going to check in on our Oakland Hard Jewelers talk and text line. Sam and Gretna, you want to talk about some Saints and Pelicans. What you got for us today, Sam? How's it going?
Hey Steve. Hey, Charlie. It's going. Following up on the Pels, I'm glad y'all brought up about 1-3, they'd have the exact same odds, and they changed that a while back after what Philly did.
Right.
So if we get like in the bottom four, because I hate the concept of tanking, regardless of draft choices, you know, losing builds a losing mentality.
Agree with you.
You know, and if anything, with the season like obviously gone, you'll see who is really going to play. You know, it's like the season's over, we're going nowhere. But yet you'll see, and that's why I'm kind of disappointed that they sent off Devontae Green, because he reminded me so much of Najee Marshall.
Right.
You know, the hustle, the sixth man, defense, you know, scrappiness. So I'm disappointed that we sent him on out, you know, but, you know, the season shot already. Before y'all brought up the Pelicans and the draft picks and so forth, bring up about the Saints. I'm very pleased with the hire so far. If you figure Kellen Moore was offensive coordinator, Nussbaum was his quarterback coach, so they're each graduating one level in parallel.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
And then keeping Phil Galliano, there was, like y'all pointed out the other day, there was no drop-off at all when Darren Rizzi elevated the head coach.
Yeah, for
and
the special
teams
coordinator.
So you're keeping the continuity of that group. Because really, who performed the best, special teams, defense, or offense?
Special teams.
That's an easy question,
right,
yeah.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, I was trying to think of this guy's name. He was defensive backs coach. He came out of Seattle. He was a player and an assistant during the Legion of Boom era. His first name was Chris, and I got to think his last name was Broussard, like Chris Broussard on radio. Do you remember that guy's name and where he's coaching at?
Chris Broussard. Let's see, Steve.
I might have his last name incorrect.
Yeah, Chris Broussard to me is an NBA analyst that I think of right off the bat.
Yeah. But we had, you know, during the Peyton era, I can't remember if it was Dennis Allen, defensive coordinator, or one of the other guys.
Chris Richard?
That's it, yeah. That's Chris Richard.
Chris Richard, yeah. Where's he coaching at?
I don't think he is anywhere
Chris Richard,
right
now.
Is he Charlie?
I'm looking it up.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, and he definitely spent some time with the Saints. I think it was the 21-22 season he was here. And I know who, the spelling of it, you think it's Chris Richard.
So the 2024 season, Chris, Sam, he spent with the Jacksonville Jaguars as their DB coach.
Okay. Yeah, because I was also looking up Ryan Nielsen, and he's with Jacksonville.
Yes.
But you hear positive and negatives about him as far as, like, getting player buy-in. And this is third-hand information, all the talking experts. And it was kind of like he was so rigid and not getting feedback from players. And it almost sounds like opposite of how Kellen Moore does things. So he might be too rigid in his thinking, but he's at Jackson. No. The Bills hired him away from Jacksonville. So he's an assistant with the Bills, Ryan Nielsen. So I'm just thinking about possible defensive assistants.
Okay.
But so far, so good on the offensive. Now, a lot of Brandon Staley's negatives was from that bad season at San Diego, but he had lost Justin Herbert most of the year. And we see firsthand what happens when you lose your quarterback.
Right.
So besides that, what is his track record as a coordinator or a defensive coach? Because I'm kind of like giving him a pass on the head coach. You know, 3 years, you can't tell what you're doing. So what's his record as far as being a defensive coordinator or a defensive coach? That's what I would look at.
Mike Silver from The Athletic joined us during Radio Row, Sam, and he had a great point about Brandon Staley. Brandon Staley was kind of the rare case of being a one-year DC and then becoming a head coach, and it's because that 1 year with the Rams was so impressive. He was the Rams defensive coordinator in 2020 when the Rams had the best defense in the entire NFL. And then he makes that leap to head coaching. He goes to, you know, Los Angeles. He becomes the head coach of the Chargers. It's kind of the scenario that it was with Dennis Allen. You know what I mean? Like how we always talk about DA is going to be now the defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears, and we all expect that the Bears defense is going to be awesome under DA's leadership.
He could focus on his specialty.
He didn't work as a head coach, but he's still a good DC.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of – I'm not putting Staley's failures as a head coach with the Chargers. I'm not really putting that against him because he's not coming here to be the head coach, if you understand what I'm saying. So he's coming here to potentially be the DC. That's not confirmed yet. He's the lead candidate. But that 1 year that he spent in Los Angeles with the Rams as their defensive coordinator, once again, they had the best defense in all of football. Now, having a guy in the middle like Aaron Donald
I was going to say the exact same thing, right?
Right. First ballot Hall of Famer and Aaron Donald right there and smack dab in the middle of your 3-4 defense definitely helps. But I would 100% be willing to give Brandon Staley a chance as DC. I think it would be a really fun hire. You just kind of have to change your defensive philosophy because you've had DA's defense in here for so long. So you have to get some new players in house to kind of fit what Brandon Staley wants to do.
I'm going
to
trust Kellen Moore's judgment on this for sure. He obviously wants to have great success in his new home here in New Orleans. And, you know, we're talking about who could possibly be on the Saints defensive coaching staff. You got to get that DC first. And I think I'm not saying that whoever it is going to have, you know, free reign to hire whatever, but I'm sure have a lot of input in who he wants on the defensive staff for the Saints. And that's why we've seen all these offensive assistants getting hired under the main offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore.
Yeah, exactly. He's the play caller. And to your point, Sam, as well, they've been attached at the hip. Him and Doug Nussmeier.
Right.
Every step of the way. Literally every step of the way that Kellen Moore has been a coach in the NFL. Starting in 2018, he was the quarterback coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He went straight from being a player to being a QB coach. And his co-worker, the tight ends coach, was Doug Nussmeier. Doug Nussmeier was the tight ends coach again in 2019. That was Kellen Moore's first year as OC. And then after that, Kellen Moore transitioned Doug Nussmeier to quarterback's coach. And he was the QB coach of the Cowboys from 2020 through 2022. In 2023, when Kellen Moore left Dallas to go to LA and work under Brandon Staley.
Who went with him?
Yeah, exactly. He was the QB coach of the Chargers that year. And to your point as well, Sam, yes, the injuries, you know, Justin Herbert was not healthy that season. They went 5-12. That's how they ended up with the number 5 overall pick and got Joe Alt. You know, that's a whole other rabbit hole to jump down. But that staff was completely cleaned out after that year with Brandon Staley when he was fired. So Kellen Moore makes the jump to Philadelphia, and he's the OC there. Guess who follows him? Doug Nussmeier. When we were talking with Renee Nadeau in the very first segment of the show, Steve, he made a great point that it's been like a vital relationship with these two guys. They know each other. They know what they love to do. And they've been there together every step of the way that Kellen Moore's been a coach at the NFL level.
I want my head coach to be nice and comfortable, and so I don't mind the hire one bit.
Kellen Moore gets the head coaching promotion. Doug Nussmeier gets his OC promotion.
Right.
It just makes all the sense in the
world.
And
the Nussbaum, we get two Nussmeyers in Louisiana now.
Yeah, and
it's
so
a pretty cool story.
Let the speculation begin about Garrett Nussmeyer's future in the dun, NFL dun, level. Dun,
yeah, right.
Exactly.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Be right back with more as we get ready for the puck to drop between USA and Canada coming up right after this. Stay tuned for more Sports Talk on WWL. You ever dream of riding in a carnival parade? Well, WWL's got your tickets to ride with the crew of Argus on Mardi Gras Day, but you got to register before midnight tonight. Ride high atop the float with everything you need, costumes and throws for two, and it's all for free. Go to WWL.contest for your chance to win the ride of a lifetime in the greatest free show on earth, powered in part by Honda of Covington. Laissez le bon temps rouler with WWL. We're going to switch gears up, talk a little baseball next hour. Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer, talking all things LSU and also the rest of the conference and how things started out opening weekend for everyone. Stay tuned for the top of the hour news, and we'll be back with more Sports Talk, folks, right after this on WWL.